Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, April 7th, 2019. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now, on Twitter at Chris Lamberth. This is episode 345. I have a very special return guest on a special Mundane Festival podcast. I have the man, the myth, the legend, Rod Morrow from The Black Guy Who Tips. You know him, you love him. Going to share that conversation with you in a bit. I just want to catch up with you guys for a little bit. Allow me to do that, okay? I'm sitting here in my apartment recording this intro like I normally do. Didn't give you the Patreon folks got some episodes. The Patreon folks got an episode of me and Maranzio Vance shooting the shit, talking about us. And you got one yesterday with me blabbing for an hour, catching you up on what I've been through over the last couple weeks, and other stuff. So that's there. There's going to be more coming up. There's going to be an interview, a review of The Best of Enemies coming up with me and Randolph. I saw it yesterday after I talked to Rod, and I really liked it. So we're going to talk about Shadow and Act did not like it. I'm starting to think, man, I don't know. I think, are we our own worst critics? Are we our own worst enemies, like Jordan Peele said? I don't know. Because I started watching, I'm like 10 or 15 minutes into this new Native Son adaptation, which I didn't realize that Susan Laurie Parks adapted. I didn't realize that she did. And that got me even more intrigued. A little history note. God, let's see. A little over 10 years ago, maybe, I did a workshop with Susan Laurie Parks, Pulitzer Prize winning playwright of the terrific play Top Dog Underdog that starred Jeffrey Wright and Mos Def on Broadway. And prior to that, Jeffrey Wright and Don Cheadle. Oh my God, you guys. So I got to work with her and it was really cool. She did this, I think it was a playwriting class or a playwriting workshop where she had these young students write plays. It was at NYU, and I was in the stable of actors that the kids could choose from, and I think I did maybe one or two plays. We did like readings and stuff, and it was really fucking cool to be in a room with her. That was just really fucking awesome. And I read this a piece on The Undefeated where they say they can't get this kid, Bigger Thomas, right, the lead guy, the main character of Native Son. And they're just like, it's bad. I don't know. They just didn't like it. It just seems like I don't know, man. It seems like the only black stuff people have liked recent. Let me shut up. But I'm checking it out, and it's pretty good so far. I mean, the main text is pretty fucked up with what happens. I was reminded of what happens in the novel from that review. But The Best of Enemies, and Randolph and I will get into it, but what I'll say now is that, and I tweeted this, folks, I think it's the best movie of its kind since Remember the Titans. As far as like a movie that takes place in modern America, like post-civil rights. You know, you had the Remember when the Titan stuff happened in Northern Virginia, like around the 70s. Let me make sure. Remember the Titans. When did that happen? And Coach Boone, the guy that the real life coach, came and did a talk at our school. And when I was in high, also in 1971. So The Best of Enemies took place in 1971 as well. Wow, I did not know that parallel. That's pretty interesting. And obviously things are done for a dramatic effect. You know, with Green Book winning the Best Picture, I know people were tight about that. You know, I would say I've been on record saying how I feel about what I feel about Green Book. Think Green Book was a good movie. Yes, they did leave things out, and we still get a great performance from Mahershala Ali and Viggo Mortensen. But I know people are mad about that, and they thought maybe Black Panther should have won, or people think A Star Is Born should have won. But these types of movies, I don't think you can just write a movie like The Best of Enemies off calling it a white savior movie. I think there's a lot more to it than that. I think it's more to it than being a magical Negro movie. There was a moment where I was like, I was the most vocal in that theater when I saw it yesterday. It was a mixed crowd. I was sitting on a row with, sat next to an Asian girl, two young white boys. They looked like they were college students. I was impressed that they were there. Maybe they had to do a book report or something. And then a middle-aged black couple, and then some black women, and some white women, relatively small theater that we were in. And definitely got some claps. But I remember laughing at in moments that I don't know if I was supposed that. Nah, no, the stuff that was funny to me. And actually, Rod and I kind of foreshadow some of the stuff that, you know, we talk about here. But this is me, you know, talking about the movie after. And this conversation that Rod and I had was prior to me seeing the movie. And Randolph and I will get into depth when we chat about it. But I will say, if you've seen Shazam, if you've seen Pet Sematary, you've seen Us, and you're looking for something to see, I recommend it. I thought this was going to be a chore, but I learned things that I didn't know. And I was pleasantly surprised by the movie. You know, the movie's not without moments that make you be like, really, really young, really, for real. But overall, it was entertaining. Great performances from Taraji and Sam Rockwell and the supporting characters. I dug it. I was kind of jealous. It was almost a part that I would have liked to have had in that film. That I was like, yeah, you know, not jealous in like a vengeful, hateful way, but just like, oh man, that would have been dope. Yeah, I don't know what it is. I think it's just anytime, I don't know. Shadow and Act has a hard time with when we show ourselves in the past and fighting for shit. Because people actually did do that shit. Like Ann Atwater, she fought for shit. And I don't think I'd heard of her. Pardon my ignorance, but you know, I think some of these stories should be told, and they should continue to be told. And it might be a genre that people just don't like, and that's fine. A lot of people don't like horror. A lot of people don't like comedy. A lot of people don't like sci-fi. But I don't think we have to shit on these movies. Okay, whatever. Anyway, I liked it, and Randolph and I will talk about it. And later on this week, so we'll see what we do with that. What else? I will give you some plugs. I'm going to be at the Del Lago Casino and Resort in upstate New York. So if you find yourself in the Geneva area, if you're near Syracuse or Rochester and you want to see me do comedy on a Thursday night, you can come to that. And then D.C., if you're living in the Washington, D.C. metro area, I am opening for my good friend Paul Verzi at the D.C. Improv. And that is May 16th through the 19th. And I'm super excited to do that show and be on that show with Paul because I have never, although I am a native of the Maryland, D.C. area, I have never performed in that comedy club. And the D.C. Improv is said by many comics, old and young, to be the best comedy club in the country. So I am super stoked, super excited to be on that show with Paul Verzi. And I think Andy Klein is on the show as well. So that if you are a part of this Black Guy Who Tips, Three Guys On podcast universe, and all the people that encompass that, if you're a part of that, you're not going to want to miss that. You know, and Paul Verzi's a great comic. He's a comic on the rise, just had a special come out in November, and it was the most viewed special in Comedy Central history. So it's going to be great. I'm super excited about that. And then there's other dates that are bubbling up. And then in June, I'm going to see Jenny Lewis, one of my favorite singers in Massachusetts. That's right now. That's on my schedule. So, without further ado, let's just get you to Rod. Rod and I, you know, it's always great to talk to Rod. I hadn't talked to him in a minute, and he saved me from just getting my ass murdered in NBA 2K19. I don't know what it is. I just can't shoot on that game. I have to do this tutorial in the video game. You know, it's crazy. Like I can beat a game like, well, I don't want to spoil anything because Rod and I talk about that. So let's just get you to Rod. So please enjoy yours truly and the great Rod Morrow talking about stuff. So I wanted to have you on because I haven't talked to you in a while. And two, I kind of wanted to talk about the case against Adnan Syed, but you bailed. And I think you have a compelling reason, but I want you to talk about it a little bit.
First of all, let's do a podcast. I feel like I was supposed to say something to start it off. The Adnan thing, I just think he did it.
See, that's how I kind of feel too, you know? I don't know. I don't know what to think.
These truthers are just, they're annoying, dude. Like, the people that are like, it's no way he did it. It's an elaborate setup. But then they, like, accuse every other motherfucker of doing it, which I'm like, y'all have even less evidence that any of them did. Like, it's, I don't know, man. I really do feel like if he didn't have those brown eyes and, you know, like, just boyish charm, man, I feel like people would just lay off a little bit.
He is mad charming. Yeah, that's a thing that I didn't think about. I guess being a cis straight man, you know, you notice people that if they're good looking or not. But that's not something that registered to me until you just said that. He is a good looking dude, and he got buffer.
And then as a podcast producer, as a content creator,
sure.
The product has always bothered me, man. Like, it's a product that is presented as being this unbiased, just analysis of the plight of this one man and this injustice in this case. And I'm like, okay, let's get into it. And then you kind of find out it's kind of a puff piece by his friend. And like, this is now the third different media creation with undisclosed serial, and now this the case against Adnan. Where it's not really about the case against him. It's really more like the case for him. You know what I mean? Like, it's really the case for why he didn't do it. It's all his friends from high school going, they don't think he did it. They can't believe a guy like that would do it. And then it's like a selection of the evidence that they've like decided is inconvenient enough that it's just basically all of it's debunked to them, you know, mm-hmm. like for example, the cell phone tower evidence, they'll present that, they'll present the fact that, they broke up, but they got back together. So that means there wasn't abuse, as if that's not a pattern of abusive people all the time, that, you know, they always say, if you don't leave, they'll kill you. But people break up, get back together all the time.
Yeah.
And then they always just leave out all the inconvenient evidence of shit, like letting someone borrow your car and your phone for an afternoon, asking for a ride from the murder victim. That same day, coincidentally, everyone can remember it. He's the only guy who has no recollection of anything that happened that afternoon.
Right.
Like the love letter, the breakup letter she wrote him, and then he wrote on the bottom, I'm going to kill. And
yeah.
Then it just doesn't come up in these documentaries or anything. It's just very weird. It's so weirdly presented to me that it makes me be like, well, he probably just did the shit. And then, of course, the ultimate like conceit that I've not heard any evidence that has made me think that this is inadmissible. But the ultimate conceit is Jay saw that nigga with the body. That was the end for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think a nigga like that is making that shit up.
Mm.
It just, you know, when you listen to his interview and shit, he sounds just like a fucking like the black friend of a lot of kids that people, you know, that got in over his head immediately. Like, he was like, I'm just trying to sell weed and live. And these white folks that got me hemmed up in some bullshit, man.
Yeah.
So I never liked that.
It was weird because it just seemed like everybody that wasn't Adnan did it. Like the ex-boyfriend from Lens Crafters or something. Like, they went to his house and he was like, I don't know. I dated her and that's it. But it still made him look creepy. And,
right.
And the guy that found it's just I just don't know, man. It feels like you don't remember that shit. Your ex-girlfriend's dead and you don't remember anything about that day.
And keep in mind, like, they always go, they didn't check these other suspects. Dog, they didn't find their DNA on any of the shit or anything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not like they go, well, if they would have just checked, they would have realized this guy's DNA was on her body. And clearly he fucking, like, he didn't just find the body. He fucking killed her. You know, like, they don't have anything like that. They just go, but he could have did it. And I'm like, well, if we're just going to do an exercise of who could have did it, your man is the one who most likely could have did it. If that's
right.
The whole thought exercise is who could have possibly did it and who had a motive, that your man is the number one dude. You can't use that same logic. You can just say he got an unfair trial, try to debunk that shit and just leave it at that. But instead, they're trying to like frame somebody else for something that's even, when they're even less likely to have done it. It's just crazy to me.
I feel sorry for his parents, man. The dad is just gone. Like, the dad is just, like, out of it. His mom's sick. And it's just, it's like, dog, if you did this shit, man, just...
You know who I feel sorry for?
Who?
Hayes' parents.
Of course.
Because, and that was a thing in part one of that documentary that rubbed me entirely the fucking wrong way, was them trying to couch it as, this is really about Hay, and we're just trying to honor her memory by finding the real killer, you know, who really did this. And I'm like, this is basically OJ's looking for the real killer documentary. You know, like this idea that, like, we're going to take her diaries and animate it and show how in love they were and what a great person. I'm like, dog, you're just making more and more bias against, you know, for him. And I think there's a reason that the community and her parents aren't participating in all this shit, because it's painful to see motherfuckers essentially say, hey, the person that killed your daughter, they didn't do it, and we're going to do everything we can to get him out of jail. And you're like, but I think he did do it. Right. You know, and people just bypass that because they're bit players in this big ass like American media phenomenon that we've all invested in as entertainment. And to us, it's just entertainment. If Adnan gets out and he really did kill Hay, for a lot of people, it was just entertainment anyway. They didn't give a fuck. It's not like he killed their friend. So I don't know, man. It just feels super, I don't know. It feels so exploitative.
Can you provide your perspective on why you think we as a society are just captivated by heinous crimes?
I don't know,
these podcasts and shit. I'm a part of it too, but you know, I just want to know what you think.
I don't know, but this one struck me as different than.
Hey Rod, why don't you take a stab at it?
Oh, okay, no problem.
Sorry.
I'll see if I can.
Oh God,
no problem, man. See if I can tell this real quick. I think we're all kind of obsessed with death, and we're like a morbid society.
Mm-hmm.
I think America especially, because we were all like, this country was built on the murder as a foundation.
Sure.
Of what people claim to be America, KKKA. Shout out to my man Randolph. He know what's up.
Right.
I feel like maybe we're obsessed with that stuff for a bunch of different reasons, but I don't feel like I'm any different, you know. Like I'm listening to a podcast now. It's about the Zodiac Killer, you know. So I don't exclusively listen to this type of shit, but you know, I'll check it out once in a while just to be like, oh man, wow, that's what's going on with that. I think we're all obsessed with it, and I don't know what it is in our psyche, but this feels a little different to me because when someone does a Zodiac Killer like podcast series, it's not like the fucking Zodiac Killer's friend doing a podcast series on how he didn't do it. You see what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
It's like there's a cold kind of disconnection from the actual people involved when it's somebody that's not like on the defense team of the person that is being convicted of murder.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I don't have a problem with people making that product. I just want you to be upfront right away. Like, yo, this is about getting my homie out of jail. So then when I'm analyzing what you're telling me, I'm not coming from they said this, because one of the reasons Serial spawned so much like Reddit and internet traffic is because it left so much shit out that people started doing their own work, you know, to be like, well, what about this? Why didn't they bring this up? And then they start arguing over it. And it's been years and people still argue over this shit. Because it's not so open and shut, and you know, it's not closed in the way that we think, but they really get off on the idea that Americans watch all this like TV, like courtroom drama or Law and Order or whatever. And it's always like circumstantial evidence. No one gets convicted of that. I need beyond a reasonable doubt. But like almost all evidence is circumstantial. Mm-hmm. All of it. Even the shit we can consider conclusive is essentially circumstantial, right? Circumstantial for a lot of places. Like, for example, you could doctor a videotape. R. Kelly had a videotape and didn't go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
DNA evidence in sexual assault. A guy can be like, well, it was consensual. You know, like there's all kinds of shit, you know, fingerprints. Well, I was already in the car. I used to be in that car all the time. You know, like people, it's all circumstantial. It's just a preponderance of circumstances lead us to be like, yo, dog, the DNA was on there. Your blood was on your fingerprint. Nigga, you did that shit. You know, and that's the part that that I feel like Serial really took advantage of, like just making no evidence is real. If you think about it, it's like, what?
Yeah, it's a thing. I've got that Murderville, Georgia podcast queued up on my list. I haven't listened to it yet, but I did listen to Atlanta Monster and a Murder on the Cape and all that. Yeah, it's. I don't know. Part of my fascination is like I do like those detective shows because you want the cop to get the killer. I mean, that's been a dream of mine to play that cop. I'm gonna get that guy. But I was just talking about like on a podcast I uploaded for Patreon. I was just saying like I do have to get away from that stuff And that's why I will watch a CBS sitcom. You know what I mean? Because it's too dark and it's too bleak. And it's just like, I need a break from this shit.
Yeah, I don't really delve into this stuff much. Like, this year is the first year I've really listened to a few, you know? And I don't find, like I said, I just like a certain style of it. I don't mind knowing or learning about this shit. I mean, we're all gonna die, you know. Right. Shit sucks. But Caruth was a great podcast. That was last year. The Aaron Hernandez podcast was good.
Mm-hmm.
I like podcasts where it's not an agenda to the podcast. So they're just telling you, here's what happened. Here's how it went down. Maybe we interview a few people and they tell their perspective of it. But as opposed to just essentially, here is the case for exonerating my friend. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a major gripe I have with the thing. And for the record, before anybody writes in to Chris, because I know these like fucking psychos love to write in about this shit when they hear somebody go, yeah, he probably did it. the thing I will say is this. It didn't sound like he got a fair trial.
Yeah, his lawyer was kind of, she was dying. She was dying.
Yeah, he had a whack lawyer. It was after 9/11, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
It just sounded like he got a bad rap, man. Just like he probably could have maybe, if not beat the case, he may have got a lighter sentence or some shit, you know, if he had different circumstances line up. So I get it. Like, I'm not trying to tell people, like, this nigga got to stay in jail forever. Maybe he did it and they still can't prove the case. That happens a lot, too.
Yeah, it's a lot. I mean, there was just, speaking of abuse and everything like that, there was a case in Staten Island recently, literally just this week, a woman was killed by her partner. And she showed up missing, and they found her in a storage unit somewhere. And
oh yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, and it's just like, it's just fuck, man. And you think high school? I just did a podcast where I talked about what it was like for me in high school. I was like, yeah, girl.
Oh yeah, I like that.
Oh, okay. And it was just like, yeah, girl broke my heart, but I mean, I just moved on and graduated. God,
right? Like, it's not. And now I have to kill her. Like,
yeah,
that's that toxic masculinity shit people be talking about, man. And it's wild because, like, you know, on the podcast, you know, we cover all kinds of stuff. And so that means I'm constantly scurrying, looking for perusing articles. Right. And especially for Guess the Race, I'm always looking at crime articles all the time. Like, what kind of wacky, crazy crime is this? But I don't get to use probably 75% to 85% of articles that I come across, because I'd say the overwhelming majority of these articles are either like crimes against children, crimes against women that are like domestic violence, sexual assault, things that, you know, I'm not saying there's no way to make jokes or whatever, but I don't find that shit to necessarily be funny most of the time.
Right.
And there's no like twist to the shit that you can be like, well, isn't it funny that this, you know, it's just fucked up is all it is. There's nothing entertaining to it or whatever, in at least not in the auspices of what we do on our show.
Right.
And I see these things every day. Like, almost, I just don't talk about it, but almost every time there's some kind of like, this woman went missing or whatever, it's just that, like, the dude that lived with her, the dude she was dating, just fucking killed her. That was it. You know, there's... And I don't have a lesson or a moral to pass on. It's just fucked up, and it's just men are like struggling with this shit. And their mental struggles are death for other people, right? Like, because this guy can't figure out how to deal with rejection, he's gonna drive from church, like careening on the road to this 20-year-old girl. He's 40. He finally pins her, like, stops her family's car at a Taco Bell, gets out and stabs her to death, you know? And I don't have a joke for that. And I also don't know, like, like, and that's also not an uncommon story. It's just, it's something I see almost every day.
Right. And it's something that, like, in this time that we're in, that we have to be more aware of, like, even like, even though like the, like Joe guy, a guy like Joe Biden, who, you know, he was Uncle Joe 2 years ago. Like you and Karen were talking about it. Like, he's Uncle Joe a couple years ago. Now it's just like, dog, maybe you need to fall back. Somebody had a, you know how people have those advertisements for t-shirts and stuff on your Facebook? Somebody had a picture of like, of a Joe, it said Biden 2020, and it was a woman wearing the t-shirt. And then on the t-shirt, it had a pair of white hands grabbing the Biden, like, you know, like, you know, like the Janet Jackson cover and shit. I died laughing. But it's a thing. It's a real thing with these women. Like, shout out to comedian Sarah Tolomash from the Vag podcast. Yesterday she had a tweet. You talking about this made me pull up her Twitter feed. And she goes, she tweets, "Me in my 20s. I think he wants to fuck me. Me present day. I think he wants to murder me." I mean, that's like, that's some, it's funny, but it's like, I mean, she's not lying.
Right.
You know,
that's the thing. Like, even with Biden, right? Times did change on him in that women now have more of a voice via social media.
Right.
It was never really cool what he was doing. I still remember the Daily Show montage with Jon Stewart showing like all the creepy shit he did to women, and like we as a society, sure, we laughed. It
right.
was funny. It look, he's clearly making these women uncomfortable, but he's a good guy, so it's not like he has some sexual improprieties or accusations of assault or anything. So because it's not a criminal thing, it's just a civil faux pas, we can all just kind of laugh at it. And then at some point, women were just like, now that I have a platform, let me tell you why the fuck that's whack.
Yeah.
And he really doesn't seem to get it, because while he apologized, he then did a campaign event last night and fucking made two jokes about it, which, you know, let's just flip it for a second. As black men, let's put it in a way that we would understand. If this motherfucker used to say weird racist shit and rub his hands through black people's hair, and then we were like, yo, I don't want you running for president if you don't know to keep your motherfucking hands out of here without asking. And then he was like, you right, times change, my mistake. And then the next night he's making jokes. We'd be like, man, fuck this dude.
Yeah, because was it yesterday, sometime last night, he was doing a speech somewhere and he hugged the kid or something. He said, I asked his permission before I did.
Yeah,
it was sometime last night. And I was like, Joe, come on, dog.
Dog, you got to let it go. Got to take the L. Take the L on it. I thought he was going to be all right when he made that apology. And then he did that campaign thing with the I got permission. And then he also, then one of the women that accused him was like, not accused him, I mean, he did it. One of the women that brought it up was like, yo, what the fuck are you laughing? What's so funny? And I was like, oh, there you go. Right back in the frying pan.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like you said it earlier this week on your show. It's just like, yeah, it's just maybe he's past his prime and it's time to, you know, fall back. And, you know, it's not helpful to say I would have beat Trump. That shit ain't helpful, you know. Like, maybe you should have threw your hat in.
Yeah, you know what's wild too is like, he don't got to stop running. Just run. Either this shit will take you down or it won't. I mean, that's pretty much every Democratic candidate got some shit around them.
Right.
That I'm like, oh, good luck. You know,
like, so, I'm voting for whatever one of y'all come out of the fray.
Exactly, man. More options, then that's all I care about. And then we'll see. Like, I can think of a reason to vote for every single one of these candidates so far and a reason not to for every last one. So, you know, this is what democracy looks like. The Democratic Party probably has the best version of like what democracy in America should look like, as far as like different genders, different sexual orientations, different races, all like putting their name in the hat to see who wins. And we'll see, man. I'm not one of these, like, no old white man people. I'm not one of these, like, can't be a prosecutor. Can't be this this dude because he said some shit about a police chief a long time ago. All of these niggas can get my vote. We'll see which one wins.
Yeah, and I think that's important, what you've kind of been driving home for the last couple years, is that, you know, we're voting for whoever comes out. Whoever Katniss Everdeens themselves out of the Democratic Party is the people, right, is the person that we're going to vote for. Because as blacks, we've always, as blacks, we've always had to make the most pragmatic decision. The lesser of two evil thing, the whatever you want to call it, we've always, for the most part, have done that, you know.
Right.
So, yeah.
And honestly, dude, if they really want to get my vote, I'm voting for the first candidate that says, we are going to change the AMC Stubbs line so that two of those cashiers are dedicated to the Stubbs and only one is dedicated to the Scrubs.
Do you ever deal with that?
Yes.
I don't fucking get, because part of me feels for them. I've worked in retail. I was having a conversation with a woman last night about working in retail. I know you worked in the food service industry. I worked in retail. I know how shitty people can be, and those are kids, right, you know. So, but it's like, I need to see my movie. That's the only time that's one of the few times where I become like a conservative, like, I mean, I am paying for this, and I need my Aquafina. I need my Dasani or whatever it is, and my candy now.
Right. I mean, the thing is, I paid this money to be an AMC Stubbs member, okay? Yeah. These AMC Scrubs members that come in and don't pay them the money per year, they deserve to wait.
Yeah.
You know, I hate to be a capitalist like this, and I hate to be, you know, so classist, but you charged me, not the other way around. You can tell me it's a charity or a donation. I want to see how much it's worth. You know, I think it's really a shame when there's three cashiers in there, and one of them's dedicated to the Scrubs, one of them's split between Scrubs and Stubbs, and one of them's for the Stubbs. No, that's not good enough.
Right.
And I know what AMC is thinking. AMC is thinking, well, we'll go by the honor system and there should be less people in the Stubbs line. But y'all don't really verify that shit. Y'all, like, anyone can get in that line.
Right.
So fuck you. I need to see some. And you don't punish people when they get in the line and they get up there and they have a Stubbs card. You should be able to say, hey, asshole, go to the Scrubs line. Get out of here. Go to the back. But instead, they just serve some anyway. So I don't like the whole system.
Yeah, it's not my favorite thing either. Especially when you're running late. You know, you get buffered 20 minutes of previews, but, you know, it's just,
I love to watch the previews. Previews part of the experience. Hey, do you ever use the app to order your food?
No, I've never done that. I've heard Karen talk about it. I don't, is it like the for the dine-in experience, or is it just even if you wanted M&Ms or something?
Dining. Well, no. It's for even if you just want some M&Ms and stuff.
I've never done it. How is it?
It is good, to a point.
So okay? What happens when you tell me? Walk me through it.
All right. So you got a movie coming. Say the movie's at 2 or 3 or whatever. You got about 30 minutes before the movie starts. So go ahead. Go in the app. You look up, you know, your order, what you want. You can do either the combos, or you can do like, hey, I just want like some peanuts and a large bottle of water or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to do it like at least try to do it about 30 minutes before the movie starts.
Okay.
I've tried to do it from like the parking lot, and you're really pushing it. You're really like, they may or may not get to your shit in time, and they'll also, they send you a time when your shit will be ready. So you need to start about 30 minutes early. So, you know, let's say you put in like a popcorn, some M&Ms, and a large bottle of water. So you walk in, you know, you know, scan your ticket or whatever, and they have a little section right next to the food place where it'll have like a bag with your name on it, and you just open it, you just get your bag and walk on in the theater.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. The only problem is you got to be careful what you order.
Why is that?
Because I ordered an artisanal pizza. Okay. Shout out to Mike Felder.
I know. Sorry, Mike.
Yeah, I ordered an artisanal pizza one time, and it looked like they like took the pizza and like put it in the box and then like slammed the box on the ground and then threw it in the bag. And once you open up the artisanal pizza in the theater, you're not gonna miss your pre. I'm not gonna miss my preview to go complain to the manager. So I had to eat a like cheese on the side of the box pizza, and I'll never do that again.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I usually, if I eat there, now see this, they opened up a dine-in last, I think it's maybe it's been 2 years. I want to say I'm not 100, I don't remember, but it's been and it's pretty good. But like the food, it's not bad. I've had it a few times. But it's almost like I feel like if I'm going to eat bad food, I'll just wait till after. But I'm trying to wean myself from the M&Ms, because I normally do the M&Ms, peanut M&Ms, mm-hmm. Because I'm black, and a large water. So the last few times I've just gotten the water. And
what, peanut M&Ms is a black thing?
According to Roy Wood Jr., I think.
Oh, I did not know that. I mean, my wife loves peanut M&Ms. It checks out. I just didn't know.
I think Roy Wood Jr. said it on your podcast. Either your show or with Bo or something. I don't know.
I don't know. It's been a long time since he's been on that show, so I probably remember.
But it was like, that's the first time it clicked for me, but I was just like, oh, I mean, I do like those. I'm black, and peanut M&Ms are great. So I don't know.
Yeah, you know, maybe because George Washington Carver, you know.
Maybe that's a thing. Have you know they've got like a solid candy bar now that they have the M&Ms inside of them?
Yeah, I saw that. Not a fan. I like me my regular peanut M&Ms.
You've never tried them though?
Oh no, I tried it. Not
yeah.
a fan.
It's all yeah. It's
I tried anything once.
It's okay. Like I try not to keep that shit in my house, so I don't. I'm just trying to do better. I'm trying to be a little more slimmer so I can get like some more guest starring roles. A guest star role. The goal is to hopefully get on God Friended Me next season.
All right, that's what's up, man.
Yeah, I can be a dad. Like I can be somebody's dad that's troubled or something.
Yeah, I've been working on it too, man. I'm eating more vegetarian meals.
Yeah.
Cooking more stuff like that instead of going out. And then my hip, like I hurt my hip at the end of last year.
Oh,
but it feels better now. So we actually were able to, like, you know, I went to the gym a couple days this week, and yeah. then also played ball, you know. So, you know, just trying to, you know, getting older, got to just start thinking about shit differently.
Yeah. Black health, young.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm. Yeah. I kind of skip over that song sometimes because it's too real. Like, hey, just get to the rapping, buddy. Come on.
I'm like, God damn it, Fonte. Like, you stop ruining my life.
Yeah. Like, shit. I was like, let's get to the rap and the love songs. All right.
Like, I can't go, you know, so I can't go from just like you, like, reading these MCs for filth and then you reading my diet for filth. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Pick a sock, buddy.
It's like, come on, dude. Yeah, dude, I did a show last night in the area. It's a Fuddruckers 2, like 10 minutes away. And it closed at 11, and it was 10:45, and the door was locked. I was so sad, dude. I was so sad. And, so I'll have to go next week. I think maybe when I see Little, I'll go and then either see the movie and then go, or vice versa. Oh, since we're talking about movies, I don't know if you covered this yet. What's your take on this event Endgame ticket debacle? Did you feel like it was bullshit?
I did not feel like it was a conspiracy.
Okay.
I know you said you thought it was a bit of a conspiracy, you know, that Avengers Endgame was trying to put out a Dr. Sebi documentary, and they wanted to keep us from getting tickets. You know, yeah. I feel you on that, but I'm more of an Occam's razor type of person,
okay.
And I think the simplest explanation is probably the truth, which is that AMC's website could not handle that many motherfuckers coming to get tickets at the same time.
They had to know. I guess maybe they... Maybe
they knew. I mean, you could, bruh. I knew I had a test and failed before. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. It's not like I think they thought they were prepared and they just could not fucking handle it because this movie is literally going to be the biggest movie of ever.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
they just could not handle the most traffic of all time. It happens. It's been a long time since something like that's happened for us, you know, but. Mm-hmm. Nigga, if Facebook could go down, like 3 weeks ago, Facebook went down. If Facebook can go down, then yes, goddamn it, AMC's website can go down because they didn't have it in them to handle all the traffic from the internet. I think it's reasonable.
I guess we're just living in a different time because, like, 2018 was last year. You think Black Panther? I think everybody's excited about that. Breaks all these records. A month, what is it? A month, 2 months later, you get Infinity War. And I remember, I was like, oh, let me get my, I remember the day. Like, I was like, oh, Infinity War tickets are out. Boop, boop, I'm good. That just happened. Mm-hmm. Now, that was obviously bigger than Black Panther, right? Made more money?
Yeah, but was that for AMC that you got those tickets?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, because in Charlotte, the AMC theater didn't sell their tickets till a couple days later.
Oh.
So, like, when it was announced that night, I was on refreshing the Fandango and the AMC app looking for my showing, and it wasn't on there.
Okay.
And then a few days later, it was like, okay, now it's on sale, and I got my ticket. So I think AMC's always had some antiquated technology back there.
Okay. Yeah, because I didn't – go ahead.
If you wanted to go to a Regal Theater, I heard those tickets were going through fine.
That's what I heard. I saw a couple people talk about that. I was like, but how do you even access that? I don't even know. I mean, I think I have a card that I would swipe whenever I went there, but I'm exclusively, for the most part, an AMC guy. I mean, it's just because it's so convenient, and there's one right across the highway. So after we get done, I'm going to see Best of Enemies. I got to see it.
Oh, you gonna see it?
Yeah. Oh, hell yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, man.
I'm excited.
When is that coming out?
It's
when
out.
Is that coming out?
It's out now. It's out.
So why isn't Shadow and Act doing their thing?
I don't know. I don't know. If they would have wrote an article, I probably wouldn't have gone. I probably wouldn't have got my ticket. But since they didn't
run. I don't, like, I go see the shit anyway if I'm interested in it.
So, yeah.
And, like, to be 100% transparent with you, man, I'm tempted to go see it, but on some comedy shit,
of course.
So which means I probably shouldn't go see it because I'm gonna be in there like laughing and other people are gonna be completely 100% serious.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I'm shocked that Shadow and Act hasn't green booked this already.
That's what I'm thinking, but like, nobody, I mean, I think it was you, me, and Randolph. I think we were talking about it. I told Randolph about it, then a couple months later, people were like, oh my god, this. You know, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. I was going to see it yesterday, but I got stuck before my show, but I got stuck in traffic. So I ended up seeing Pet Sematary and then doing my show. But yeah, it's on my docket. Why not? You know, I think it's going to be interesting. Sam Rockwell, that's what he does. Plays racist dudes.
Yeah, I mean, look, when you got a gift.
Well, you got a gift, you got to use it. If not, you're...
Would you play in a movie about race where you knew that Shadow and Act was going to, like, you know, like someone finally says, look, Chris, it's time for you to get, like, a major role in a movie that is going to be green booked. And you kind of know it's going to be, like, like as you're getting apart, you're like, yo, man, they're gonna be mad about this shit. Do you take the part?
Yeah. It's because if Shadow and Ack was going to be mad at me.
Yeah, like you just knew it was going to be like if potentially, like, and let's say you're not going to be the Oscar winner. Like, you're not going to be the Oscar nominated role. Like, you're just in the movie. So, like, and I don't mean like a bit role, but like enough that people go, that's Chris Lambert, right?
Okay.
Would you, like if you were in this movie as like the husband of Taraji, would you like, and you knew like people are going to be like probably pissed about the way this goes down. Like, I looked at the script. It's got some white saviorness in it. We hug the Klan at the end of it. Like this could be, you know, the Klan guy teaches us how to make Kool-Aid. Like this could
So with the extra sugar? Oh shit.
So you put two scoops.
Oh like, shit.
Like would you take that part and just deal with it?
And I'm not cooning. I'm just an actor. I'm her husband, and I support Taraji.
Obviously, yeah. I'm not talking about like a straight up cooner. Like, yeah, obviously not straight up some coonery shit. Like Mahershala, but just a smaller part. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, I would take that part. Yeah, of course. I have Navient to answer to. Yeah,
I appreciate the honesty, man. Because I feel like people be lying, man. I'm like. Yes, I do that. What do you
Because look, I was trying to tell, like, I was trying to tell the great Aisha Harris from the New York Times, we hadn't seen Mahershala eat like that. We never seen him get busy like that. Moonlight. He was really good. He won and everything, but he was in there for like 10 or 15 minutes, and I listened to him. On that the Variety during award season they pair up actors and they jerk each other off about how good one another is and stuff. I like watching those. And he did one with Mahershala did one with John David Washington, and Mahershala was saying, you know, I haven't really gotten a chance to really get a meaty role like this, so I was excited to take it, and I did my best. And he was just talking about his struggle. I was like, yeah, I get it. And he rocked out. Mm-hmm. And you know, that to that point, that was the best that we had ever seen him. And he won, and I was like, all right, yeah, okay. You know.
Reminds me a little bit of like Lupita this year in Us.
Yeah.
Where, like, I feel like we've mostly hoped she was a great actress up until this point. You know, like, it's been a lot of, as black people, it's like, okay, cool, she got to be Nakia. She was in Africa Chess, as as JL calls it. She was in Star Wars, but she was a CGI character.
Right.
She was... You know, like, there's just all these moments where we're like, I think she can act. I hope she's a good actress. She's definitely a beautiful woman and all that stuff. And, you know, and she made it past the token, like, phase of when people were just kind of like, you have to say she's beautiful.
Right.
And to where people actually really could see her and be like, that's a fine-ass woman.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I think a lot of black people were already there, but, you know, white people was just on some, like,
oh my
put her
God.
In a gown.
Yeah.
Don't put her in a... put her in a gown. And so to see her like get a role from a black director where he said, yo, I think you can do this part where nobody else has really done something like this before, and it's gonna require like every ounce of acting chops you have, and she really killed it, you know, like, yeah. So that was like amazing to see.
Yeah. And I mean, she rocked out in 12 Years a Slave, but I mean, that's the light that we, you know, we low key, some people can do that in their sleep. You know, I mean, she went to Yale, for God's sake. But it's just like, right. It's like, okay, she was great in that. And yeah, like, I think didn't she do some movie where she played like a flight attendant?
Liam Neeson's Nonstop movie.
Yeah, and it was just like, all right. You know?
She was there for like seconds. That movie felt like she filmed it before she got the part for 12 Years a Slave.
I think so. Yeah, it was like, or like she had done that and she's just like getting work. But Right. Yeah, like I think, you know, like last year we had Hereditary, that Toni Collette performance that was just like, you know, I thought that was pretty great. But the movie itself, I was just like, all right. But she killed it, and I think Lupita did. I think she set the bar pretty high. Like, I think everybody's got to beat her right now.
Right.
You know, and since we're living in a time where we are letting these movies that come out early in the year get considered, like Get Out going Wire to Wire from the beginning of the year till still being considered, winning Oscars, getting, you know, Black Panther winning awards and being considered for Best Picture. So it doesn't really matter when these movies come out. If it gets a lot of buzz and the performance is good enough, then, you know, why not? So we got to see what everybody else has to offer, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought she was great, and I really enjoyed the movie. And it's I do like the fact that there's people that don't like it, and they kind of, but they want to talk about it all the time about how they don't like it.
And I'm kind of okay with people not liking this movie as much. Like, the thing that got me, man, was watching, and I saw this the night that the movie came out. I didn't engage with these people, because fuck them, but I saw, like, I said something about, like, yo, Lupita Nyong'o, you know, it's amazing that this is in Us. And this dude, he's a white movie critic, like, added me and said something like, it was like he shit-talked Get Out, and then was, like, shit-talking Us at the same time to be, like, on some anti-Jordan Peele type shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I just had a distinct feeling of like, this is the movie a lot of white critics were waiting for to kind of get him back for Get Out. Because we've talked about this before, and I told you, I still don't know why white people like Get Out. Like, I know why we like it.
Yeah.
But white people, it's like, are they just imitating what we're saying? Because there's no fucking way you really enjoyed that movie and don't, you know, even nice white people should probably look at that movie and be like,
yeah,
yo, is that me? Am I like kind of on this shit too? You know, like, where do I harbor this kind of like racial, like microaggressions and shit? They don't even see themselves in it in this very weird way. But Us being a movie that isn't about race, and it's kind of Jordan Peele's like divergence from being like, no offense to these directors, but from being a race man director, right? He doesn't want to be Ava DuVernay. He doesn't want to be Barry Jenkins. He doesn't want to be Spike Lee. It seems like he's kind of being like, I'm going to be black, but in my own weird way.
Right.
You know, of like, I'm conscientious about who I'm employing. I'm conscientious about what scripts I'm writing, but I'm not going to be like the race movie guy. And I think some white people kind of reject this notion from black folks, right? It's like, no, you got to stay in your racial lane.
Yeah.
And then some black people even kind of reject it too, because I saw a lot of the negative type of reviews that were more on some like, why isn't this movie blank? You know what I mean? Like, why isn't this Get Out Part 2? And he didn't want to do that.
Yeah. And people are like, oh, this is theories on YouTube theories, why it's in the same world as Get Out. And it's just a movie, because I looked at Pet Sematary. I was entertained, but that shit was disposable. But Jordan Peele makes what he calls a horror movie. And people are like, I didn't care about the characters. Well, do you care about characters in a horror movie? Do like, most people care about them?
Why does this movie have to hold that weight? You know what I'm saying? Like, we don't, like, I saw It Part 1 last year or something.
Yeah.
And I know that that's a nostalgia thing for most people, but I didn't grow up with it.
Neither did I.
So I walked out of the theater and was like, that shit wasn't even that good. Like I was kind of pissed. Like, why did y'all hype this fucking movie up? And then I found out it was supposed to have a part two, and I was like, oh, well, I mean, then like maybe put both them bitches out at the same time. Like, I don't know, because like it's this huge fucking cliffhanger at the end of this movie, and you're like, what was the fucking point really of all this shit? And you don't even find out like how the like science of the fucking thing works, or the fiction of the thing works, right?
Mm-hmm.
This being that can siphon off energy or be whatever, eat life force. I don't know what it was. But the point being, I'm okay with walking out and being like, I just didn't understand it, and it wasn't that deep. It was just a horror movie.
Yeah.
But when it came to us, motherfuckers was really walking out like, no, man, this has to be deep. And like, but no other horror movie has this pressure on it to be deep. And the glorified fucking It movie that people love.
Right.
It doesn't have that pressure to be some deeper meaning. It's just like, what a weird, creepy thing we experienced. That's it.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I thought that this movie had layers to it, but I wasn't like any movie that you see, you kind of look for subtext and stuff like this. But I think it's just we're kind of programmed to think, well, it's Jordan Peele. And then, but with Get Out, it was like, I thought that was a, you know, like seeing these movies like the Faculty, you know, like Body Snatchers and shit like that, Disturbing Behavior, where they would take these kids' brains, implement these things in these kids' brains and turn them into blue ribbon teenagers where they were acting like the parents wanted them to be. And I just thought it was fucking cool. And it's just like, I say in my act, I say like Get Out is a 90-minute PSA to stay in your own race, to date in your own race.
All right, stay away from the white girl.
Yeah, and it's like, and you know, you did it made me think about the black girls that I, you know, let get away. And that's the joke, you know, but it's I just thought it was a good movie and I really liked it. That wasn't even my favorite movie of 2017. My favorite movie was, my listeners know, my Columbus, my that I'm on my Columbus agenda. Don't let me talk about that. But it was just, I just enjoyed that movie and I thought it was good. And then it's like, okay, Get Out was really good. I'm excited to see his next one. And so, like, I enjoyed this one. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you know,
don't get...
Yeah.
It has layers.
Yeah, I know what you mean, though. People were breaking down that trailer when the trailer first came out. Well, this is right. Blah, blah, blah.
The layers are within the narrative context of the world that he's built. That,
right.
Like, I don't mind examining that, you know, yeah. But, like, some of this shit is just like, someone wrote us today, Chris, and I'm not joking. They wrote us an email saying that they thought Us was, like, a movie that showed Jordan Peele is in support of Bernie Sanders. And Bernie Sanders' 2020 campaign slogan, which is not me, us. And I rolled my eyes. They're still being rolled. My eyes are still rolling in the back of my head because it's like, why do y'all have to make this movie into what it's not in order to enjoy the movie? And it's quite possible, as you alluded to earlier, maybe people just didn't enjoy the movie then.
Like, I don't think people did, yeah.
Yeah, maybe you didn't like the movie, so you want to make it something deeper, and you're just not into it. Because the thing that a lot of black people do, and this is not to shit on black people, I love y'all, and this is why this is why we need y'all to succeed, okay?
Yeah.
It's creative. But sometimes you tried something you really wouldn't have fucked with because a black person made it. And I think a lot of niggas that don't even fuck with horror tried a horror movie and went, I don't like this shit. And it's like, you don't like horror. You don't go see other horror movies throughout the year for the most part because it's kind of a silly genre.
Right. Exactly. And that's what he likes. I mean, that's what, you know, like he liked Jordan Peele grew up. He's our age. He grew up liking horror movies. So that's what he's going to make. And that's a lot of the, you know, Easter eggs and the homages, the glove, and like everybody was like, well, how did they get them? How did they get? It's like some things you don't need the explanation for all the time, because a lot of other things in the genre don't get explained. Where shit just happens, or it's inferred, or they're gonna make a part two, or whatever.
And also in this movie, a lot of that shit was explained, but I feel like people were so fucking like, it's like they were so obsessed with making shit fit some type of agenda.
Yeah,
that they just ignored obvious shit. You know, like there's like, okay, here's an example. Because of gender wars between black women and black men on Twitter, there's a lot of people that really get excited about the moment where she like tells, you know, a slight spoiler.
You're not in charge anymore.
Yeah. Well, she tells him that he's not in charge anymore. They're like, yes, because you need to listen to black women and this is the problem. And I'm like, or she knew because of how her origin story means she actually does know, not because she's a woman and she innately needs to be in charge and men don't know. No, literally, she's kept a secret from everyone in her family.
Yeah.
She's the only one that fucking knows what is about to happen
right.
and the depth that she go. So that's the reason she's acting that way. And it's also a moment where we see that she still got some of that shit in her, too.
Right.
The way she kind of like goes off. That's what that moment's supposed to mean in the narrative of the story in the world that he built. But instead, we have to have a moment of like, can I write a think piece on this is why black men should not lead? Like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, I think that's you just kind of reclarified your point that you made a couple minutes ago, that within the context of the story, the world that he created. And that's the fun part, right? Because I saw it. Mm-hmm. I saw it twice and I was like, oh, fuck. Like when she's, you know, she's at the beach and she's saying, like, you stop dancing. He said, I'm not good at talking. You know, she's like, I'm not good at talking. I stopped dancing. Oh, I gained a little weight. You know, I'm not dancing anymore. And it's like, you bitch. You know what I mean? Like she's, and so it's just like that. And you look at it and it's just like, that's fucking cool. So it's one that you still think about, you know?
The other thing too, I noticed in the movie. God, I'm sorry if you guys have not watched this movie.
We're gonna spoil
it.
But
I just keep thinking of shit from the movie and wanting to talk about it.
Okay.
But the other thing is the son and Gabe, the father, both use the fact that your tethers are kind of controlled by you can insert your will on your tether because they don't have a soul, and they both use it to kill their tethers, right?
Yeah.
Like Gabe. With the, you know, on the boat, and then the son making it literally walk into the fire, which is interesting because that was how he was born. So like we have that moment, right, where you're like, wow. Well, there's a moment where Red is the one. So Red is the real one. So she controls. She can exert control over Adelaide. So she makes her lock her wrist into the fucking chain by moving her own wrist. Like to make sure it's
holy
she
shit.
Also, right. It also explains why the fuck Red, she couldn't hit Red. You remember that fight?
Yeah.
And like Red is just like, it's like Red is just dancing around her because she can't control. Like it's the control is the other way with her, them. So I don't know. It's
fuck. Damn.
Yeah. It's a very good, deep, like people will say they didn't like it. That's fine. But it's not a stupid movie. It's
no.
a very good layered horror movie with rules in the context of that universe.
Yeah.
And motherfuckers walked out like, fuck it. Like, it means it's about classism as opposed, I was like, well, what about just the fucking movie we saw? Like,
yeah.
Isn't that fun to talk about?
Yeah, I think it is about classism too, but I think that what you just said blew my mind more than the classism thing because I didn't notice that. I don't want to go see this again until it comes out on. I'm saving it for Blu-ray because I've seen it twice.
Yeah.
But I'll
definitely.
Yeah. But that's fucking. So what do you think about? Because we got to wrap this up. I want to know what you think about this theory about the kid, about Jason and Pluto. Did you hear?
Yeah, I heard. K-Bad said on Firestarter. No offense to K-Bad, but it doesn't make sense.
You don't think you don't think he was switched the summer before?
Nah, I don't think so because the burn scars were from birth for Pluto.
Okay.
He said he was born to the fire and that's why he got flamed. That's why he got scarred up in his mouth like that.
When he's so digging the tunnel, he's just a weird fucking kid.
Right.
Okay.
Right. It can't be that way cuz Red knew that was her kid from the C-section and burning of the baby.
Okay.
So, like, you can't wait till he's 13 to just switch him and then, what, his mouth fixed and then the other kid's mouth got burned? Like, doesn't make any sense.
That is true.
No offense to K-Bad.
No, I thought that shit, too. I was like, oh, shit, you know. One quick thing. I want to talk about Lil Nas X and Billy Ray, and then I want you to get your thoughts on the playoffs. So let's just close. I didn't know too much about this. I knew about Lil Nas X. I knew they took him off. I hadn't heard the song, both of them, until yesterday. But what I'll say about it, I want to say get your thoughts, too. I felt like, I tweeted this last night, Rod. I felt like I felt like Billy Ray.
That makes me laugh every time you do it. Every time.
I appreciate it. It made that for some, because I woke up. You know how you wake up to death, like when you turn on the TV, somebody got shot, somebody got killed, and I heard I heard the kid got taken off the Billboard charts, and I thought that was fucked up. I hadn't heard the song, and I was like, they did this black kid wrong. And I'm looking at Twitter, I wake up, and people are like, oh, Billy Ray floated on that joint. And I saw the little clip, and it made me feel good. And then I felt like that was what Green Book was supposed to be. That was the feeling. Like, Billy Ray, he did him a solid. And, like, that was, like, I thought that was fucking beautiful. I thought it was great. Your thoughts, Rod?
Well, if that was Green Book, then Bomani went shadow and act on it, because he was like,
well, you corrected him. I don't know if he adhered to it.
Yeah, he was like, Billy trying to hop on that wave. I mean, I was like, he's a problematic. Like, he's a straight white dude. Just give him some time. He'll fuck up anyway.
Yeah.
Billy did us a solid on that one, man. Got my man back on the chart, because you can't deny it's country when Billy Ray hops on. I mean, come on now.
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole debacle was weird, man, because I think they lied when they said it got on the chart by accident. I just don't believe Billboard makes mistakes like that. And it's not like it got on the chart at the bottom. It was number one.
Yeah.
Like, and then I just think I really, honestly, truly, in the heart of my heart, believe they thought that kid was making fun of them.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe he is. I don't know that kid. He says he's not, but it felt kind of like they were making fun of him.
Was it like a challenge? And, was it like, I read somewhere, was that like a, like one of those challenges, make a country song or something? Somebody will correct us.
Something like, it came from one of those websites where, like, that's the whole idea of the website, is to make these, like, shorter videos and stuff. But
yeah,
I don't know the full backstory, man. You know, it just sounds ridiculous. Lil Nas X already sounds kind of ridiculous. Old Town Road, the song kind of is a little ridiculous, even though it's a bop.
Yeah.
And then, I think white people probably felt they were being made fun of to some extent. Were like, take this shit off. This isn't real country, even though they let Taylor Swift go on there and she ain't made country music since fucking 2010. I thought they felt offended or whatever the fuck. And now that Billy Ray saw that and was like, yo, let me hop on this shit and get it back on the charts, I say, welcome to the cookout, Billy Ray.
Yeah.
We appreciate you, dog. Have a seat, you know?
Yeah, bring the chips and the soda.
Teach us how to line dance, okay?
Yeah.
We want to listen to where dance. Up in this beat, we'll teach you electric fly. You teach us how to line dance.
Yeah, that shit made me feel good, man. That's like the first white savior thing that made me feel good in a long time. Like,
it's also one of the few times I've seen the vast majority of black Twitter just have fun in a long time.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Felt like the old days for a second, where people used to just be like, hey, did y'all see this silly shit? And people didn't go, let me tell you the 12 ways that this is problematic. Like, no one looked up Lil Nas X's old tweets. Everybody just had a good time.
Yeah, it just made me feel good. Like, I was busy this week at doing TPS reports and stuff. And then, for some reason, the last few Fridays have been like, we need to do this new thing. And, you know, like, they dropping, like, more work, like mixtapes on Fridays. It's like, God damn, please don't bother me today. And then I'm just like, and then I see that and I actually listen to the song. I was like, oh, that made me feel good, you know? And the people, I don't know, you're always going to have dissenters. Hey, Miley appropriated, but her daddy didn't. You know, so I mean, look. Yeah.
Maybe this is what he owes us. This is reparations for letting Miley play in our water, and I'll take it. This is it's fun. It's a bop. I probably played that shit 35 times Friday.
Yeah.
Just letting it go back to back. Like, I mean, you just don't get that good feeling not that often anymore. So
yeah.
In a week where it started off super shitty with Nipsey Hussle.
Right.
Like, I'm glad we could kind of end it on a high note.
Yeah, it was one of those things where it was just like that. Just because sometimes we talk about shit that's fucked up all the time, but it's mm-hmm. It was good to see that. And it's interesting how, you know, hip hop and country are the same in a lot of ways. You know, we can easily talk about the differences, but you can talk about, like, from a socioeconomic standpoint, where you come up from nothing, you have a skill, you sing, you can rap and do whatever you do to make money, and you listen to the content. It's about men and women relationships. You know, my ice is this way, my boots are this way, my tractor mm-hmm. is dope. There's a song called "She Thinks My Tractor Sexy." You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I got this shit, look at my shit, look at my truck. You know, I remember I was near Atlantic City in the on the outskirts of Atlantic City eating at a Longhorn Steakhouse, and they played country mm-hmm. music, and there was these women talking about breaking their ex-boyfriend's like glasses in his truck, you know. That's the same mm. it's the same shit. It's just done in a yep. different it's done in a different way. It's not anything new, you know. And I watch Nashville. I'm probably one of the few people that watched every episode.
Before Hayden Terry, man.
Oh yeah, it's Hayden and Connie Britton, Friday Night Lights.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Karen's white counterpart. And before we go, I want to get your thoughts on the playoffs. Playoffs are in about a week. What do you see going down? What do you predict?
Man, I'm gonna be real with you. I think the Warriors gonna win it again.
Mm-hmm. They were showing out a couple nights ago.
Yeah, I think they, you know, I don't do a lot of conspiracy theories, but I'll go ahead and throw mine out there.
Okay.
I think they have had a dysfunctional season, like off the court, because they don't want the narrative of them being the, like, heavy favorites coming into the season, and they won a few, so they have more of a what the disease of more, whatever they I sure. think Pat Riley or Jackson said.
Yeah,
like, they have that shit going on. They know KD's leaving at the end of the season probably.
Yeah,
and it's all just led up to this where they've been sandbagging. And then when they need it, they'll turn it on and win. And I don't think the Rockets can beat them. I don't give a fuck about 2 years ago or whatever it was when James Harden, they'll never go 0 for whatever threes. If the Warriors would have hit more of those threes, the Warriors would have hit more of those threes. That's how the Warriors feel. They feel like the Bulls in that way, where it's like, we'll get enough when we need it. And I think they're going to win again. I hope I'm wrong. I'd love to see somebody else win it.
I'm going to be mad.
Them niggas are too good. They added one of the top five big men in the league, and it's been like a background story of like, yeah, man, but they might not win because Kevin Durant and Donkey don't get along. And I'm like, nigga, that's not going to change nothing.
Yeah, I don't see them. Like, they're the Patriots. But, you know, the way that they – some people are like, oh, I don't fucking like – I was at the barbershop last week, and they were like, they're just – man, you know, they're just a pile-on team. I was like, look, man, those guys, they drafted those dudes. Sans Kevin Durant, all those guys got drafted, and they made
They're better than the Patriots.
Yeah.
The Patriots have single elimination on their side. Like,
mm-hmm.
the Warriors have to beat you four times.
Yeah.
So they are clearly a better team when they beat you. Like, they are barely, like, the odds of them winning on some bullshit are very low compared to, like, in the NFL, you just, you know, like, the fucking Rams aren't supposed to be in the Super Bowl, and then they immediately show everybody why. That never happens in the NBA. It's like, we just don't get those, like, type of fluky ass moments in the NBA. Like, if you play somebody in the finals, they're pretty fucking good normally.
Yeah.
Or the Western Conference Finals, you're gonna beat a good team to get there. It's just what it is. So
mm-hmm.
yeah, man. I don't know. I'm more interested in like the off season of what's gonna happen now, because I don't I think it's a foregone conclusion the Warriors win this shit.
Well, this is the biggest one since LeBron's move to Miami, right? But the offseason we're going to have?
Yeah, I think so. Because you got KD on the move, probably.
Got Klay, but I don't think he goes anywhere.
DeMarcus Cousins. Kyrie's a free agent. Yeah. Kawhi Leonard's a free agent. Jimmy Butler's a free agent. There's a lot of stuff.
Did you ever watch his Hot Ones yet? Did I send you that?
Nah, I mean, listen, the guy's a diva. He's doing a little too much media promotion shit for me right now. Like, concentrate on fucking winning in the playoffs, dude. Like, I know this is all about raising his free agent branding stock of, like, look at me, I'm a fun guy. I got a TV show. I got a YouTube show about wine, and I do interviews on podcasts. Like, dude, stick to the motherfucking, to the script and go help your team win. You need more. What'll help you really have image rehabilitation is not a fucking podcast, but just getting on the fucking court and winning some games and not being a dick whenever you take a loss. That's all. Shout out to my man Dominic Rivera. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I just thought about you and Dom when I saw it.
Chicken wing. Let's be frank. The Sixers should be the favorite coming out of the East. Like, if you look at what's going on with the East, the Celtics have really underachieved in that. Like, basically a meltdown off season with Kyrie, who's clearly 1 foot out the door.
Yeah.
The Raptors have kind of leveled off, but, I mean, they just got Kawhi. That's all they got. Like, beyond Kawhi Leonard, like, none of them niggas scare you on that roster. I take that back. That one African dude, he good. But in general, they don't have a top-loaded team or a stacked team the way that the Sixers do. The Sixers by far have the best roster on the East Coast right now. Mm-hmm. The Bucks, they got two injuries, pieces injured right before the playoffs. Who the fuck should beat the Sixers?
Are they soft? Is Embiid soft?
I don't think he's soft. I just think when Jimmy Butler gets on a team, everyone starts looking at the young players like something is wrong with them. And I don't think anything is wrong with Embiid. I think he's a beast. He's young, but he's giving you everything you want. I really think he would have been an MVP candidate if they hadn't got Jimmy Butler.
Does Giannis just have his number?
Oh, Giannis is better than him right now.
Okay, okay, all right, okay.
Yeah. See, Giannis is about to be, I mean, he could possibly win MVP, right? Like,
yeah.
There's no shame in Giannis being better than you when you're a little bit younger than him and when he's, like, possibly the best player in the league. That, like,
right.
You know, people love that shit in the NBA, right? Because, like, remember how, like, Jimmy Butler punk Carl Anthony Towns in practice.
Mm-hmm.
Does anybody watch these games? Carl Anthony Towns be beasting on niggas.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes it's just that dude got your number or that dude's a dick or whatever, and it's hard, and that's a hurdle you're going to have to get past in order to make it. And I think for Joel Embiid and that Sixers team, the hurdle might be Giannis. But I'm going to say right now, I don't see any reason they can't fucking beat them in a seven-game series,
With those injuries, yeah.
Yeah, they're better than them. There's no excuse for them not to come out of the East, minimum. And if they don't come out of the East, and then they got all them free agents, it's a failure, and you got to fire Elton Brand.
Damn. How long he been? He ain't been there that long, has he?
Nope. Just got the job, but he decided to play for down. And, well, I shouldn't say, okay, if they don't come out of the East, and you don't re-sign some good free agents, then he got to go.
Okay.
Because he mortgaged the whole future for a rental of Butler, a rental of Tobias Harris, and a rental of Bogdan. All these niggas are gone at the end of the season unless you can, you know, find a way to keep them. And then after that, I think that's when you have to pay Ben Simmons and Joel in either next year or the year after. Like, don't quote me on that, but I just think at some point you have to pay them some, probably you're going to have to pay them franchise money. So, I mean, he's in a rock and a hard place if he doesn't get some of these guys to come back.
okay, let me ask you this. So I currently have NBA TV on mute, and they're showing the previously aired Raptors Hornets game. Is Kemba's not in any danger of leaving, is he?
Oh, he's in 100% danger of leaving. Yes,
he might go to LA.
Unrestricted free agent, bro. The worst kind of free agent when you're a sorry ass team, right? Like, bro, he's that dude. But I would never have bitter feelings towards him, man. He did his time here.
He did his time.
He was a exemplary inmate. He fucking had no behavior problems. Never shitted on his teammates.
Yeah,
like I wish him nothing but the best when he gets his freedom and gets out in the real world and go play some basketball that means something.
Damn. Yeah, he can't be mad. Yeah. Shit. Oof.
Who's your team, man?
I don't have one. I like LeBron, but I mean, I like all these guys, man. I don't have any. I don't even have a team for 2K. That's why I keep getting my ass kicked. Like, I'm glad we had go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just saying, I'm glad we had this podcast before, because like 20 minutes before I was playing, I was getting my ass kicked by Doc Rivers' son. What's his name?
Oh, Austin Rivers was cooking you?
Yeah, I was playing, and I was the Warriors, and he was just giving it to me, man.
That's the problem with 2K, man. Like, it's starting to get to that point where it's too real, and I gotta really know how to be an NBA player to play good at this game now. Like,
yeah,
I miss the difficulty of just, you know, the old school, or like, what team am I going to pick?
Yeah.
But now, like, you don't know how to make a three-step in and out, step back, crossover. I'm like, no, nigga, that's the job of the computer.
Yeah. It's like, I beat The Last of Us twice. I beat Horizon Zero Dawn. I can't shoot a fucking free throw.
Right. Like, what is this? I turned Lara Croft into the deadliest assassin known to mankind, where I could kill people. I didn't even need a gun. If you just put me and a Bowie knife in the middle of the jungle at night, I'm killing everyone walking.
Yeah.
And yet I don't know how to do a crossover. What is happening?
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Oh, yeah. Last thing too about the NBA offseason. Hey man, I'm a little sick as a LeBron fan. Hopefully you can relate to this.
Mm-hmm.
Getting a little goddamn sick of everybody acting like him playing with this hurt hamstring is no big deal.
Look, man, I'm like with Steven Jackson. Like, he was on Fox for some reason with what's the big guy that that we used to like, but nobody, we hate him
Jason
now.
Whitlock. I never liked him, but yes, Jason Whitlock.
Yeah, like I don't know why. Like, I don't know when he made that heel turn, but it was a long time ago. But
yeah, he's the Sheriff Clark of sports analysis.
Yeah, he just, like, he said something, and, like, Stack was just like, why are y'all trying to dim his light? Why do y'all always try to dim that man's light? Like, what the fuck?
It must suck to, like, need to go on there. But I guess that's, like, their green book, right? Those other
black dudes. Well, he's on the jump. There. Like, he's on the... Like, he's on the jump on ESPN, so I don't know. I don't know, but get your money. But I don't fucking get it. I kind of felt like he should have stayed out, and they're blaming him and all this stuff. I don't know what to believe. I don't know anymore.
It's a weird obsession with Jordan, right? Like, it's really about protecting Jordan at all costs, and it makes a lot of dudes lose their fucking objective minds. It's One, Golden State Warriors have got to be the greatest team ever assembled.
Yes.
To stop one man in NBA history. We've never seen this before.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Durant, they don't even like Kevin Durant.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? They basically just, it's like the pickup gym. They let him run with them because he was tired of losing, and he just jumped on the good team that was already winning.
Yeah.
And everyone in the gym rolled their eyes, and now he can't take it. Like, when people go, well, yeah, you're winning, but, I mean, they don't even need you. And he's just like, fuck you. Fuck the media. Fuck everybody. Don't worry about what I'm doing. And then, like, with LeBron, like, so Jordan, I don't think Jordan ever faced a team as good as this. Period.
No.
And I have respect for that era, but this shit is, like, some fucking supervillain shit.
Yeah.
But then the other part of this is you have of LeBron, like, tear his fucking hamstring. They're in fourth place in the West at the time with that roster, like with a roster that didn't even make the playoffs the year before. Pretty much the exact same roster almost, right? Just a few more veterans.
Yeah.
And this motherfucker comes back after, like, some ridiculously short amount of time that he really should have sat out longer.
I think so, too. Yeah.
Right. And we see that he's hurt, right? They're out of the playoffs by the time he comes back. They can't make the switch, the adjustment. He just tries to, like, will himself out of a hamstring, which no one can do. and then they go, yeah, man, LeBron didn't play any defense anymore. I'm like, this nigga can't get out there.
Yeah.
Like, look at him. He's limping down the fucking court. Like, he's basically like, give me the ball and I'll just bring it down and shoot a three and we'll see if we can win this way. So, I don't know. It's like people turn their eyes off when it comes to LeBron. They just only care about their agenda. And that makes me sad because they're missing a lot of greatness.
Yeah.
And I think also the pressure on him is so ridiculous at this point, man. I listened to, I think it was, what is it called? Black on the Air, maybe?
What the fuck was that? Him and Bill Simmons. Yeah.
It's not like the Jason Whitlock Hour. I was like, what is this shit, man?
Get
like,
the fuck out of here.
It was kind of ridiculous. So I feel kind of like that's what's up with, like, everyone just wants to protect Jordan so much, they just lose all objectivity. And the ghost of Michael Jordan, of course, would have beaten every Golden State Warriors team by 50 points every game and with the flu, right? Like, mm-hmm. He would have never lost a game. And it's just gotten to the point where it's ridiculous. So,
I love them both.
Me too. And the new thing is they don't want people, they're saying people don't want to play with LeBron.
Yeah, now like, they don't want to be in Space Jam. They don't want to be in the new Space Jam movie.
Yeah, I'm like, are we sure about these things? Are we like, what? How much of this is true and confirmed? I feel like this offseason is going to be very, very telling to see who wants to come there, because you can't tell me Anthony Davis was willing to burn his whole career down to play in L.A. and also tell me no one wants to play with LeBron. How does that make sense?
It's fucking weird, dude. I think they just create this stuff. A lot of these guys grow up playing with each other. Those dudes are friends. Like, they do the shop together. They play together in the summer. They want these rivalries where it's a lot like the political shit, how it's like pro wrestling. Like, how it's like, well, like, you and I could be on opposing sides politically. Rod, I think you're wrong. I think you're wrong, Chris. And when the cameras got cut off, we go get steak and lobster. And we're friends.
Right.
This guy's a friend of mine. This guy's a friend.
Right.
Rod is a friend of mine. I don't know what you're talking about.
But
the fans, you know, they want this stuff. They want this shit to be real. But it's not. It's just a fucking game.
Anytime I hear an NBA fan talk shit about, like, the Kardashians,
mm-hmm.
I always laugh because I'm like, sports is the biggest reality show on TV.
Yeah.
Like, listen to how y'all talk about the NBA. It's all like, this person doesn't like that person. And I heard that, you know, Jimmy Butler threw a tantrum and it's because he's a man. You know, he's just such a man. I'm like, okay, but if this was like the Kardashians or Love and Hip Hop, we'd just be like, yo, did you see that crazy dude throw a tantrum last night? Only in sports are men like allowed to fully believe in the hype of like the wrestling type of hype. Like,
It's crazy. I don't know. I just like having fun. I enjoy it all. But my only time just being emotionally invested was that, you know, maybe that first win. It was hard for me to watch him, LeBron. I can see here. Look at me. It's hard for me to watch him lose like that to Golden State. Mm-hmm. But, you know, those guys are fucking great. And I like Steph Curry. You know, we talked about that shit before.
Yeah, and I don't mind I mean, it's just funny that that's where men allow themselves to be emotional.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I couldn't even watch the game. Don't call me.
Yeah.
Don't talk to me on the phone. Like, you know, I was sad. I was sad, man. I was depressed. My team lost in the playoffs. And I'm like, yo, that's crazy, because if I tell you I watched This and Us and I cried, you'll be like, you fucking pussy.
Yeah.
You know, like, what? You were just crying because you saw Michael Jordan win a trophy after his father died. You don't know Michael Jordan his dad, and you were moved to tears. I was moved to tears because I know William, okay? He was in Randall's life for 2 years, and I deserved to cry when he died.
Yeah, it's just we pick and choose that stuff, but I just try not to get emotionally invested in these sports, but I like seeing these black guys win, you know? Win at life. It's fun to me overall. I like to keep up to be in the conversation, but I try not to be too emotionally invested.
I get emotionally invested in like Tristan Thompson's baby mama stuff, you know?
Yeah.
That's where I try to spend my emotional energy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hey man, it's all we're all gonna die and it's a diversion.
Yep.
And on that note, Rod. Rod, plug your stuff. I know people, we could always have new listeners, so you never know who's listening that's new. So plug your wares, good sir.
You guys can catch me on Old Town Road or on Instagram, like in pics of booty models and stuff. Okay, mm-hmm. I'm in the street. follow me on Twitter, Roderick Prime. Listen to my podcast with my wife that we do 5 days a week, where the motto is "Nothing's Wrong with Funny." It's called
The Black Guy Who Tips. You do it with your wife. It's a great show.
5 days a week. Come check us out anywhere you find podcasts. The Black Guy Who Tips.
That's great. Rod, this has been great. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. I think we just made some podcast gold, bro.
Me too, fam. Thanks for having me.
All right. Take it easy, everybody.